Hello, everyone. Hello, Marcy.
Hello, Dee.
I did that backwards today.
That's all
Just
right.
been kind of one of those days.
And computer problems, that's why we're late. My computer decided to freak out.
Good thing you have a phone to back up. Okay. So, hope anybody is not offended. I will be drinking during this live because it has been one of those days, and I just can't, okay? I made it. I am here, and it requires drinking.
Hey,
So.
that if I had any in the house, I'd be doing it too.
All
Today was a
right.
me too. Lots and lots of screaming babies. I was like, is it
Oh.
a full moon? I don't know what's wrong here, but this is ridiculous.
Oh, man. Yeah. Mine started at 8:30 this morning, and it was just like constant. Just did not stop. And I haven't gone that much in a very long time. And my body is like, what are you doing to
Screaming in pain, like we moved too much.
All right. So I'm gonna go ahead and I didn't count us down into the show. We just jumped right in today. So we're gonna jump into the intro. If you're new here, let us know if you're been here before, even though we're very, very sporadic, and we often try to tell you we're going to be around, and then we like, sorry, not going to happen. So sorry for all the teases, but if you're new here, this is kind of a little intro into what our podcast is and what you can expect.
Welcome
Welcome
to
to
Umbrella
Umbrella
Rebellion.
Rebellion,
I'm Marcy.
and I'm Dee.
We are finding healing after leaving a cult.
We will be discussing abuse and personal experience with the ATI, IBLP, and fundamental churches.
Trigger warning. This podcast may contain descriptions of various forms of abuse. Please take care for your safety and well-being while you are
If the
listening.
content becomes too much for you to handle, please turn this off. We hope to expose harmful teachings that lead to and justify abuse,
with the hope that those that are experiencing abuse can find support and escape from it.
All right.
Hi.
We are here.
And we're back.
I'm telling you, like around 3 o'clock today, I was like, I don't want to cancel again. I don't want to cancel again. If I can't get it together, I'm gonna have to cancel. I cannot do this again. Like, I feel so bad when we have to cancel at the last minute. Oh my goodness. We are gonna be talking about counting the cost, which I think is an amazing title for that book. And she did a really good job with whoever she decided, if it was hers, if idea, or whoever she brainstormed with that. That was like the perfect title for that book.
Agreed. Agreed. And she did an impressive job of writing it. Like, I only got through part of it thus far, but it was just, she has a knack for writing and for giving you a really good, like, picture into their life or into a life of an ATI family. Like, I was really relating to a lot of things she said because I was like, oh my gosh, we did that. Oh my gosh, that's exactly how it was. That was really well said. Yeah.
Definitely. I agree completely. And just, I was kind of impressed by the writing. And I do know that she had like another writer that was credited on the title page of the book or whatever, the cover of the book. But there is no way that you, not being in the cult, that you can convey. And I felt like I was there with her. And I know a lot of it is because we've experienced it. But some writers are able to bring you into the moment. And I don't know if there's anybody on here that wasn't in the cult that did read the book that could attest to whether they felt like she brought you into the moment and could feel the feelings that she was feeling. And I think that part of the writing is what blew me away. And I was not expecting that.
Yeah, I wasn't either. I was expecting more like just a rundown of their story. I wasn't expecting like a little keyhole look into what family life was like, and how much it I related to it. I was also thinking, oh, this is, you know, a family on TV and they're huge and we weren't that huge and whatever, but I related to so many pieces of it. Even some of the words and the phrases that they use.
Yep. Like,
oh my gosh, that is ATI. They were all spouting the same thing. Because a lot of their phrases were in my household too. And I've always wondered if all the families used the same things or if my parents just picked up on those particular things. And it wasn't. It must have been across the board.
I mean, one of the things about cults, right, is you have almost your own language. And they like, excuse me, beer is getting to me. they like have that. You know, a lot of it is, you know, a new revelation. And so they have you do this. And so, like, if you want to be, you know, the biggest, best, you know, family in ATI, you're going to follow this new thing, right?
Like her model families that she was talking about. And I was like, oh my gosh, yes, I remember model families. Like, I could list like probably four or five of them that I watched go in and out, and they would either fall from grace. Or something would happen and they would, you know, of some terrible nature, and then they would leave because of that, you know? So.
For sure. For sure. So I have to apologize about my background because, we are in the process of moving. And so I don't have a setup for filming yet, but my husband and I bought a garage that he is now trying to put electricity in. And so when he gets that done, then we're going to start the little shed conversion into my studio / office space. So I will be able to have all of my stuff set up and I don't have to do it every single time we film. And I am so excited about that.
I was just thinking tonight how nice it would be to have an office where I could just go in, sit down in the chair, click a few buttons and be done. Not pull the crate, not unbury the crate, out of the closet. And then pull the crate out and then set each and every piece up and plug it all in and make sure it works. And then not have problems like with connecting, like just now that made us late because, you know, my computer freaked out because we moved around. Like,
because it forgot how to do the thing because it's been so long since we've done it. Yes.
Yeah, I did. I totally forgot how to do the thing and I hit the wrong button and then I didn't know how to undo it. Yep. And then the button went away. And so then what do? I don't know.
Oh my gosh. So I'm so excited that you're here today, everyone. Give us a comment. Tell us where you're from. If you are a survivor, if you are just a follower of the Duggars and you saw that we're talking about Jill's new book, so you wanted to see what we had to say. Let us know if you are a longtime follower, new follower, you know, let us get to know you a little bit. And then shortly, we're going to go ahead and start diving into the whole book and some of the points that we felt were important in the book. Some highlights of things we weren't expecting in the book. Some of them have been featured on other stuff. Like I know people did a thing and that quote about, you know, how she said that, you know, her dad treated her worse than her pedophile brother. I was like, what? And that I was like, I have to get this book now. So that was good marketing there. Good job, Jill. So, and I think what we're going to do, because I've had such a long day and my attention span is very short, and I want to make sure that we hit all the highlights that we like to, you know, hit. And not miss anything. I'd like to run through just our kind of like points and kind of give a little bit of commentary on that. And then feel free to comment if you can kind of give us like context of what you're commenting on, because we're going to be moving fast through it. We can go back, read your comment, and we'll know what you're talking about. Because sometimes people make comments and I'm like, I have no idea what you're saying that about. So... to just kind of give us a little bit of context and give your comment. And then at the end, after we've read all of our bullet points and kind of given our commentary, we'll go ahead and engage with you and, see, you know, what kind of questions you have or share your input about the book and what you feel about it. So, hello, sister I'm sorry, I'm having a really hard time with
Madrigal.
Madrigal Morning. Longtime follower, not a survivor, but grew up in Bible Belt and can see my local culture was affected by IVLP, like I encountered the umbrella picture, etc. Absolutely. It's
yes.
And I think the Shiny Happy People documentary really helped people understand how pervasive this teaching got into evangelical Christianity in all of the teachings, and people are relating to it who weren't in the cult. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really, really important for us to, acknowledge that even though some of them weren't in the cult, they were harmed by the cult. And, we feel like you are part of our community, whether you were IVLP, ATI or not. If these teachings were used to harm you in any way, you are part of our community. And we are so glad that you are here.
Mm-hmm. There were many families in my church that were not actually a part of the ATI program, but they taught the same thing at home. They learned, and that we were all the same mind in the same church. And so they were just as harmed by it as we were. Just and even I would even go so far as to say, even if they didn't teach those things they were learning at church, because the there were teaching them, the Bible studies were teaching them, all those things were pervasive, and so they were still harmed by it, whether they were fully involved or not.
Absolutely, I agree. And just I don't know
of the group of people.
I'm trying to get this to where I can still see what we're doing, and
almost got it.
I know. I'm trying to do too many things at once. So let's see. I gotta find where my notes were. Okay, there's my notes.
Yeah.
I need another screen. I should have hooked up my second screen.
We did we did highlighting in it. And so that's what we're gonna go over tonight, is what we noted and highlighted. I'll talk while you're figuring it out. The thing that I was thinking as I was getting ready for this podcast, random thought, doesn't really have to do with a cult, but it does have everything to do with patriarchy. And there was a statement that she made in there where she was talking about how her mom didn't like having the births on TV either, but she was willing to do it because her mom did it and it was to help the family. And it just hit me in the gut as I was putting on lipstick that how willing this dad was to sacrifice and put his women, his daughters and the mom on the line. It didn't cost him anything. It only earned him money. He was willing to ask that of them and for them to be uncomfortable in a woman's most vulnerable moment. And he was willing to cash in on that.
Right.
That is such a patriarchal thing to do. So
exactly. I agree. Okay. I'm going to figure this out one day.
And it surprised me that her mother was uncomfortable with it. Now, her mom had probably had some more choice than she did, because mom decided to have, 18 kids. Mom needs to provide for those kids. And so mom made the sacrifice she had to do to get the money to provide for that many children. But still, she was probably pushed into it and forced to do some things that she didn't want to do because she was under submission. Oh. Different for
four.
Have a choice. And those weren't her kids, and she didn't need to be supporting her family that way.
Well, that whole thing was because she signed a contract she didn't even read.
And the other thought I had was they made her sign that contract the day before she was married so that she was under contract before she was under her husband's authority.
Oh,
did not have the power to protect her. They made sure that happened before he was transferred under his authority in their mind. So he was locked in. He couldn't protect her. He couldn't say, no, my wife isn't going to have the births put on TV. No, my wife isn't going to work for free. He had no power there. They made sure that happened before he had power.
Oh my God, I didn't even think about that, but you are so right.
They locked her in beforehand, before they transferred authority to her husband. Her in.
That just
Does that not blow your mind?
blows my mind. That blows my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Because for him to have done it then, it was even more sinister and calculated
With
than.
cult rules, sinister and calculated within the cult rules, not just within
Yep.
a TV contract, not just
Yep.
he didn't tell her what he was doing or give her enough information. Within the cult rules, he was doing that. So he
Yep.
in cult rules too.
Because had he done it after they got married, chances are, according to cult rules, for him to be above board, he would have had to go on to the husband and talked about the contract and
Yes.
had the husband also agree. So he got a little loophole and, like, here, hurry, 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 sign this before you get married. And then I don't look bad because I didn't do it while. Why? Oh my God, Marcy, I'm so
Just
glad you
like,
said that. Yes.
yeah, that was also another thing while I was doing makeup. I was like, oh my gosh.
I hadn't thought about that, but when you said that, I was like, oh, that makes it even worse than I actually thought. I mean, like, so when I first heard about it in like the little snippets that they shared about it, either on Shiny Happy People or, different things, I was like, wow, that's so underhanded and that was so skeezy. I can't think of any other word.
Yep.
And then when you said that, it makes it even worse because he used the cult teachings to take advantage of his own daughter.
He did. He did.
Oh, it's so gross.
So gross. Just slimy. Just slimy.
Okay, so the writer I was talking about that she credited was Craig Borlase, I think. Don't know who the, I don't follow writer people, and I don't ever remember people's names. So, I'm bad with names. So, I don't know if he's, a known writer or anything. If anybody knows like any books that he's, done that you've read before, the shoot it into the comments and we'll talk about it. All right. So we are going to dive into our notes and highlights on counting the cost. So I just want to like share this with all survivors because I think that this is something that we, even if you don't ever read the book, you don't ever purchase the book, I think this message needs to be told to all survivors. And I love what she said here, and I'm like so grateful for her saying this. Oh, it just my heart, okay, full. And like I want to meet her one day and hug her and tell her thank you. But anyway, to those who have been harmed in the name of quote unquote religion, to those who have suffered behind closed doors and have yet to find their voice, to those who have begun to find their voice but may still be living in a season of isolation, to those who, like Esther of the Old Testament Bible story, have courageously answered a call for such a time as this, Esther 4:14, and despite the backlash, have now found their voice. From victims and survivors to strangers, families, and friends, or family and friends, this book is dedicated to you. May you all know that you are not alone, that your story, your voice, and your mental health matter. And I want you, if you are ever struggling, to go back and listen to Jill's words. Those are for you. She wants you to know that you matter. And that's kind of the whole message of our podcast is we think you matter too, and your mental health matters, and we want you to know that. And I thought that it was very important to point out that she used a verse from the ESV.
Yes, not New Testament,
And
Old Testament. That's not New Testament. King James Version.
Right. I was like, not a lot of people are going to know the significance of that. But I was like, oh, snap. Oh, snap. Good for you. You've branched out. I'm so proud of you. So the Lord is stronghold for the oppressed, a stronghold in times of trouble. So those of you who still believe and find strength in the Lord, she is telling you her to. I know a few people have mentioned this, that she only put her kids in the family tree, and a lot of people appreciated that because she didn't list everybody's children and kind of protected the privacy of her siblings' children. And I think that was very, very classy. All right, so here's our so I'm just going to kind of flip through all of our highlights and kind of share why it was significant to me. So she talks about her, like, the story in this chapter is kind of like kind of setting up, like, I would say, like, the first moments when she realized that things might not be what they seemed. And her world started to open to different things when, oh God, what is his name? Derek, right?
Derek.
Yeah. When Derek came into her life, and it kind of started to broaden her world a little. So a smile that's pure innocence, but protects like a shield. And her voice was full of sweetness and joy, but I knew that voice well. By that point in my life, I'd been obeying it for 23 years. I knew what was coming next. No boys and girls on the same sled. So this story was like her and Derek were out playing with the kids, and it was not like they were alone. Everybody was around, and they were sledding on the same sled, and she got in trouble for it. And it just, we had talked about in one of our episodes when we were talking about the Shiny Happy People documentary, how Michelle Duggar's voice mm-hmm. was purposely crafted and infantilized. And I thought it was very poignant that she said it was to convey sweetness and joy, but it also was her mom's shield. Yeah. Like, if she didn't put that voice on, she couldn't be the perfect model wife or mother. And that just hit me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, because meek and quiet spirit.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So, All right, so next one. Oh, and that's a really cute picture of them together. I don't know if that was the same sled day or not, but and then her next chapter is called Sweet Jilly Muffin, and it's kind of like her pet name that her parents gave her, and it's kind of almost her childhood persona of the person who always sought approval. And so throughout the book she'll reference to herself as Sweet Jilly Muffin, and that is like her character almost of the child seeking approval, right?
Yeah.
Her inner child almost is what I, you know, what I got out of it. So yeah. She mentions, you know, that her mom said, "We don't dance. Remember, we want to be careful how we move our bodies so we don't draw attention to the wrong areas." So, you know, that was just something that, you know, they would play music to kind of like change the mood in their house. But as soon as it got to dancing, her mom would shut it off or give them this reminder. And it just goes to show you how even benign things that normal people do and wouldn't be thought of as wrong in any shape or form in any of society. It was always focused on how what you're doing is going to make someone else think wrong thoughts about you, and how ingrained that teaching was, that it was an everyday occurrence when music was on and somebody started dancing for her mom to be like, nope, nope. Mm-hmm. Don't do that.
Like, even in daycare, even in with children that are 2 and 3 and 4, it is part of the program to put music and movement as a part of the curriculum. It is developmentally necessary. Like, mm-hmm. the DHS states they require it as part of their curriculum because children need to move. And it struck me that she was older, but there were still younger siblings that were young, little. They were 2 mm-hmm. babies, 2, 3, 4, 5. They need to move. Mm-hmm. And they were already being told these things. It was already ingrained in their mind. Like, and I remember being told like things like this in my own household. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to move so badly, and I wanted to move my whole body, like my butt and my hips, and we were never allowed to move our hips. That was the prime thing not to do. And so I was at an entertainment center that had a door that you could only see from knees down when, at my height, and I would go behind there and I would shake it out. I would against the rules so that I could move my body.
So I love that you said that, you know, movement is imperative for development for, you know, toddlers and having a child on the spectrum. You know, I'm very aware of how neurotypical children learn spatial awareness,
yes.
and where their body is in space and how to operate their body in space. And dance is one of the best ways for them to understand proprioception, is what it's called, is yeah. where your body is in space.
Lines, movements, patterns. It literally connects your brain.
Yeah.
Yes.
What
I was looking for. It connects neural pathways.
Neural pathways. Yes. Yes. And so all of the fundies that don't allow their children to dance are developmentally stunting their children. So. Just saying. Okay. So the next one. So along the lines of the dancing is, remember what happened to King David was dancing in the street after returning with the Ark of the Covenant. His wife despised him. Now, I don't recall. I mean, I recall this story and I recall teaching about it. Mm-hmm. And I recall different teachings about why his wife despised him. And I don't think it was necessarily because of the dancing. There was something else going on.
I don't remember what it was.
But. Yeah, but it was like, you know, almost like he had done something wrong other than the dancing. But they focused on that as the reason because it justified what they were teaching. So again, scripture was twisted. So if anybody knows what I'm talking about and they've heard differently, please give it in the comments and we'll talk about it later. So, so then she goes on and talks about, you know, some different things in their childhood and stuff that they were doing. She talks about a vacation that they took, one of the few vacations that they took to the beach, and their family had tried to find a very secluded part of the beach for them to go to so they wouldn't be inundated with visual stimuli. She had a little girl come up to her, and it reminded me of the story that Marcy said on one of her episodes about, you know, going to California. And what did that girl ask? If y'all were pilgrims or something?
Like, do we live like with the Indians in tents and prairie schooners and stuff? Because I was impressed. A calico long skirt.
So I was like, oh, that's so similar to the story that Marcy said. That was like, we have to talk about it because I'm guessing this is a very common occurrence. Like, I was an adult when I started, you know, I was just looked at as a weirdo because I was an adult. So I never really had those interactions with, you know, younger people in this, you know, scenario. So the little girl comes up to her and asks her, why are you wearing those clothes to swim? And she said, when she was close enough to get a good look at us, why are you not wearing bathing suits? And she was like stumbling to try not to lie, but not to like call more attention to the fact that they were sticking out like sore thumbs, yes. Which is a very awkward thing to put your kids in, and doing that causes them to question like a lot of things and the normality of their lives, and like, and just reinforces that everything else around them that isn't like them is dangerous.
Yes. She talks a lot about the danger that they felt like was outside of the home. And I really is that that was the same speech that was used in my home. I was afraid of the world. I was afraid of people. I lived in an amount of fear for many, many years, even way into adulthood. Like crippling fear, like can't function fear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like can't go out of your house because you're afraid of what will happen to you. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then she says that was one of the first moments that she remembered feeling awkward about the difference between the safety of my family and the strange lands beyond it. Like I said, it was that, you know, us and others moment, you know, one of the many that I'm sure she had. So, oh, there was a picture of them at the beach.
Yeah.
So. Mm-mm-mm. Which I'm surprised they had. Oh, and here's one of those great sayings. I'm surprised they had a baby in a just a diaper. That was, you know, not normal sometimes for you to even see out in public a baby in diapers in ATI and IVLP.
Yeah. No,
the others may, but we may not statement.
Mm-hmm.
It was so used. What were you going to say just a minute ago?
I was going to say the same thing. I'm agreeing with you. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or if I was going to say something else, I don't remember what it is now.
It was about the diapers, right?
Oh, yeah. You didn't very often see babies undressed. And even if you did, it was in a secluded area. It was in the nursing mom's room or some other safe place. Mm-hmm. So it was.
Go ahead.
It wasn't out in the open. They provided places at conferences and things like that for that type of thing.
Yeah, because, I mean, why should a mother, you know, like, drag their kids off? I mean, like, why can't you just, you know, I mean, I get, like, not doing it out in the open of everything and letting everybody see everything. But, like, sometimes you just got to do what you got to do. And, you know, going to find a secluded area and dragging seven kids with you to go change a diaper.
Yeah.
It's kind of ridiculous.
Yeah. We even held up blankets sometimes around or a stroller. We would do that. The siblings would help shield.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. And I don't know if anybody else follows her on TikTok, but Lindsay from the Shiny Happy People was talking about a story. Her and Chad Harris, Ark Radish on TikTok, had gone back to headquarters, and they were talking about, I had caught one of her lives, and she was talking about it, and there was like a sign or a painting or something with that quote on it, others may, we may not. And she looked at Chad, and she was like, we are the others. I was like, yes. Oh my goodness. So I love it. So she was talking about her dad telling a story, and it was one of those stories that he told very often and very frequently about going to his first, I guess, Beth Acuse Conflicts seminar for Bill Gothard. And after he, you know, went to that conference, he was convicted about, you know, the music he was listening to. And he took his 8 tracks and he took a hammer to them and busted them up. And I, you know, it just struck me because it's like, oh, well, I guess before fires, it was, you know, beat them up with a hammer and throw them away was sufficient. Because when I went to the thing, it was, you know, like, I don't know if they taught it necessarily or it was just like, a thing that was, you know, kind of like in the teaching of people, you know, taking what was evil and burning it to cleanse it or something, you know, so you kind of made that correlation. And so when I came home from the basic seminar and I burned all of my, you know, 90s alternative and heavy metal music and pop music and even my 70s, you know, classic rock stuff, you know. So I was like, You know, even back then, they were destroying that gosh darn rock music.
Yes.
Okay. So let's see. What was the next note I have? Oh, so she was talking about that boycott club. And I think in one of the docuseries or one of the videos I've watched, it's kind of a common story that people tell about Josh and how hypocritical it was of him when he was younger. And he was trying to stop this gas station or something from selling pornography. And he created this boycott club, but no girls were allowed. Mm-hmm. And Jill wanted to be a part of it. And she kept begging and begging and begging. And finally they gave in because she paid $2.
Yes.
And I was like, wow, how cheap was your soul, Josh, that you would pay for $2?
My thought with this too was how young they were encouraging them to create groups. And these children, even this young, knew how to create the group and how to run a meeting, what to do in a meeting like that, of how to handle it. Well, I've got, you know, you put that person in charge of the tracks, and because they talk about what tracks they can, like that. And I remember a lot of the teaching encouraging you to create groups and teach the children how to create groups and do that. And that this was supposed to be a mature and teachable moment for them to explore on their own, to create a way to influence the world around them. And, but they're tiny. They're using politics when they're that old. Like, it's just scary. It's almost scary.
Right. And branding it as a, you know, a teaching moment to bring them up in later years. And you see Josh was involved in a lot of political things and trying to promote his religious beliefs that were contrary to his actions, but I digress. And just, it's kind of that whole Joshua generation, which I don't really know a whole lot about it, but when I was watching Shiny Happy People, I was like, oh, so it starts with encouraging kids to, you know, create a club to show people the truth, and then using innocent children to try and persuade people to believe what you believe. I mean,
it's just prosperity. I mean, I don't have any problems with clubs and that promote life skills, but this is about bending people to your will and your belief. This isn't about living in a world together in harmony. This is about bending them and punishing them if they don't.
Yeah. And so, like, in the opposite, you know, when, you know, I've seen younger children be involved in stuff like pride parades or promoting and supporting people about their right to choose or stuff, I've always had like mixed feelings about it, but it's like, I feel more on the lines of people are encouraging their children to express their own thoughts in those areas sometimes. And I know it can go both ways. Whereas in the IBLP cult and the Christian fundamentalism, it was one message only. And you could have no difference of opinion. And if you had a difference of opinion, they would not encourage you to express it.
Yeah. And if you did, you were ostracized. It wasn't inclusive at all.
No, right. Oh, okay. So like, yeah.
Or change or creativity or anything. Be here. Wear the mask or don't be here.
Exactly. And, you know, just, you know, the whole thing, like, you can pay him enough to bend the rules. And that's so IBLP. If you pay enough, you don't have to do all the things.
Yes. Or it's okay if you're a girl. That was the other thing was, well, it's a boys group. You can't be in it because you're not, you know, whatever. Yeah. The rules for the girl. Yeah.
Sorry, I'm trying to get the barking dog situation My son left so he didn't disrupt my live, and then now his dog is barking, interrupting my live. Hold on one moment. Let me get the dog in my room. Yeah,
I thought the snack for dill pickles with pickle salt, and that kid thing to
Oh,
do.
man.
That was awesome. You got to have pickles.
All right, go lay down. All right, you may hear some tails wagging and beating different furniture around me. All right, so moving on. Let's see. So along those lines, she had talked, let me see where this was about. Oh, so she was talking about the ATI conferences and everything, and how, her different experiences in that. And, even then, when she was there, she could tell that Mr. Gothard wasn't like the rest of us, and the usual rules didn't seem to apply to him.
Like
And I
different
thought,
kids, but he was teaching about all those things to everyone. Yes.
yeah, right. So, yeah, and how. He wasn't held to the same standards that he preached. Okay, so next, so this is where she talks about the model families, and she says, over the years, I would learn from watching model families paraded on stage, as well as reading about them when they were profiled in the IBLP newsletters, what it looked like when a family had devoted themselves to living successful, God bless life. Oh, just want to make sure I didn't have anything else on that.
She talked.
And I go
Okay,
ahead.
I was going to say she talks about them being interviewed backstage to come up on stage at the conferences, and that is true. They would gather them, and they would all wait at the back, and he would go through them, and they would decide who was going to get to go on stage. And sometimes those things were planned way ahead too, if they were if they had the music or whatever. But a lot of but there that did happen because I worked backstage at Knoxville. So
That's so interesting because, like for a big production like that, you would think that would be a little bit more planned out than show up, come backstage, I look at you, see if you meet my criteria, and then you can immediately go on stage. So were the model families really vetted very well?
well, I think some of it was planned. Some of,
Right.
but a few of them were not. So,
Gotcha. Yeah.
or they were lined up ahead of schedule and before the conference, and then they were asked to come and do that at a certain time.
Oh, okay.
Already kind of, they might have already knew kind of who they wanted from his travels and things like that, and then they would
Oh.
bring them in and didn't decide what who was going to be going up there. So. And they would
I
send
guess, yeah.
Universal Babies families a long time beforehand, and they would know who was going to be there on stage for that rehearsal.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, and they needed to see how much of the stage they would fill.
Yes. There were rehearsals for that. Yes.
Okay, so this is she's talking about the model families and the choir and everything. And then the most women were smiling constantly. And let's see. Oh, so she said that she could tell that they didn't look happy. They looked nearly perfect. And she says, I wasn't the only one paying attention or comparing myself to what I saw. One evening, not long after my first homeschool conference experience, one of the model families visited our area, and a lo local church hosted a small event for homeschool families to hear them speak. The family played music and sang. Then the parents spoke about their daily routine and gave tips on how they raised their children. At one point, the mother explained a new concept she had started teaching her younger kids. We have always taught our children to address us with yes, ma'am, or yes, sir, she said, but we decided to take it a step further and teach them to say, yes, ma'am, I'd be happy to. Mm-hmm. So that ties into the teaching of IBLP about obedience with a joyful heart, and how they were trying to train their children to say the right word so it looked like they were obeying with a happy heart, and it sounded like they were obeying with a happy heart, but their heart could be as black on the inside, as long as on the outside it looked shiny and happy, right?
Right. Well, I think also we were taught too that your heart had to be happy on the inside. You couldn't have conflict, you couldn't have darkness, you couldn't have anger toward what you were being asked to do. If you had any other feeling besides joy in your obedience and in the yielding of your will, that was a thing that was said all the time, yield your will, yield, then you were automatically an awful person. Like, you know, you were out from under your authority, you were out from under the umbrella, and you could get hurt. So even your heart being upset and not being joyful could cause you to do that. So there was a level of fear that kept those children in line, and you just had to struggle with that darkness in your mind and not let anybody else know that you were in opposition to it. So it wasn't just that the kids were just taught to do it on the outside. They were taught that they had to do it on the inside too. And there was a lot of guilt and shame wrapped up in that, because of course you're never going to be able to do that, because you had no control over what you were being asked to do. So and humans aren't like that. humans carry both dark and light. There's no way that you could always constantly every time have a joyful spirit about something you were asked to do. Like, where's the autonomy in that?
So. Right. So, I mean, that was kind of like what I was saying is like, you were teaching them what I would say, like a rote response, right? And that was big no-no is having rote responses or rote prayers, right? Yeah. So to condition them to being joyful and pleasant and showing it on the outside, but the real heart matter, we're not going to address, right? We're just going to polish it up and put it on display, but we're not going to actually ask you why you don't want to obey. You know, we're not going to see if there's something that we can do to change the circumstances so you will happily obey. We're going to just tell you what you're expected to do is shove down your feelings. I don't care what you think about this. You're going to have to do what I say, and you're going to have to put on the shiny, happy face and make it look like you're being happy. You're happy to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. You comply. You must comply. My battery's about ready to die. I'll be right back.
Oh, no. Okay. let's see. And I didn't really want to go over the whole Nike thing, because that's so talked about everywhere. And I just felt like, you know, as survivors, there are different things that kind of mean different things to us. And that's kind of something a lot of, you know, the people who weren't raised in this focus on. And I just didn't feel like it was important. I felt it was more important to, you know, talk about how the teachings, you know, she shares her experience about how the teachings affected her and not necessarily these weird things that their family did. And this one, she's talking about how her mom was kind of teaching her about how the way you dress can affect, you know, other people's thoughts about you. And the way that she taught it was that she told a story about, okay, and I'll just read it out, what the quote is. You know what made me want to stop dressing like I used to? It was when I learned from your dad that men aren't like us girls. When women wear tight or revealing clothes that show certain parts of their skin between their collarbone and knees, it gets guys going and stir up sensual desires. So she essentially was taught by her then husband, it's still her husband, but when she was younger, her husband was like, hey, so when you dress like this, I have naughty thoughts. please don't dress like this so I don't have to have naughty thoughts. Mm-hmm. So it just screams pervert to me. Like, he and all of those men that focus on that, it just screams pervert to me. Like, yes, I understand men have thoughts, but making a woman responsible for those thoughts is just so disgusting to me these days. Mm-hmm. And it just makes me so mad that it's still a thing. And just how young they started focusing on that with, you know, like 4-year-old girls who mm-hmm. don't even know what those kinds of thoughts are, mm-hmm. and making them feel responsible because they didn't cross their legs and some man may think something dirty about them, instead of saying, like, there's men who, you know, want to harm you. I want to protect you. Here's some pants.
Yeah.
So you can climb a tree, you know?
Or learn to protect yourself. Learn how to protect yourself. I had to go over that with my 8-year-old today. And I was, I already had to do that with my 8-year-old, but I was like, you know, if something like that comes up at school, you have my full permission to punch him in the nose. Like, just punch him in the nose and then I'll deal with the principal, because nobody has rights to do anything like that to you.
Exactly. You have a right to defend your own body.
That's called self-defense.
Yep.
That's what the word is for this, is self-defense.
So I didn't really highlight this one, but I wanted to ask you about this because I remember hearing this a lot. Do you mm-hmm. remember hearing, like, teachings and different stuff and, like, them focusing on this window of opportunity?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. It was a phrase flown around all the time.
Okay, so then she talks about, you know, the way that her parents had kind of conditioned them to not talk about things. And mm-hmm. So she says, by preventing us from discussing anything controversial or sensitive with each other, the instruction not to stir up contention among the brethren became a tool for silence, for control, for guilt.
Mm-hmm.
So
there was many unspoken silent rules that to not speak of things, and there were many things off limits to you couldn't, because you were speaking ill of someone else, or you were stirring up contention, or it wasn't your place to judge, even though we were judging all the time. And that was one that I was like, oh, wow. It was a tool for silence, control, and for guilt. Guilt, because guilt kept us in place a lot.
Yeah. And feeling like if you voiced your opinion about something that was unsettling,
mm-hmm.
you know, then you would be guilty of stirring up contention, and you didn't want to stir up contention, and you wanted to be a good Christian, right? So it was this kind of spiral of shame, you know, and guilt that you would go through, like, this isn't right, you know, but if I speak out, I'm going to be stirring up contention and I can't do that. So yeah, it was, even about, you know, very mediocre things,
mm-hmm.
you know, would just be blown up as you're stirring up contention, because if you get people to be silenced about the little things, then they're definitely not going to speak up about the big things.
Oh, true. So true.
Right. So see if I have any more. I think the next one I have is a pretty good one that kind of struck me. And so she was talking about how the Russian delegate or something like that had come to her house, and Gothard came with them. And she said, like, in my opinion, having such a man of God visit our home was more impressive than being greeted by a fan in an airport, and even more impressive than a visit by the president himself. Mr. Gothard was different from a boisterous politician, but also very similar with his charm. at a little over 70 years old with black dyed hair, which when I was in it, I knew his hair was dyed black. It was a very unnatural black. And then, like, that was one of the things that really just did not sit well with me when, you know, I was told I had curly hair, so I couldn't be in the front office and be seen by Mr. Gothard on a regular basis, but I could be in the kitchen and be seen with him because it was in the same building as his office. You know, that was weird. And I was like, but that's an unchangeable. And unchangeable was one of his teachings, that, you know, you should accept the unchangeable things. But then again, he dyed his hair, so he wasn't accepting his unchangeable.
Yes.
So it was like such a like weird, like, what? I don't understand this.
Mm-hmm. And what's so funny is those of us that came from it at it from a young age, it didn't even cross mind that he was changing an unchangeable, because I wasn't looking at it as from an adult perspective. I was looking at it from he's a prophet, he's a man of God, he's beyond reproach thing. And you're not even taught to even question things anymore. You just accept it for what it is and don't think it through. That's the most pervasive, dangerous thing I feel like about this, is that you're taught to not think it through. You're taught to be silent and you're taught to comply. You'd never think anything through, because if you do, and then you do have a different opinion, you already know the opinion of your authority. So if you say anything, you already know you're going to be in the wrong. So there's no point to say anything.
Because there is no acceptance of other opinions. It's only one.
No, yeah. It's always the authority's opinion that matters. And you already know that. So why is there wouldn't be any reason to say anything against it? You know, you're going to get in trouble. So you're going to be out of line, because obviously you're not accepting God's form of authority through them and their opinion.
So I know a lot of survivors have talked about the next part. Mm-hmm. The tater tot casserole from the cookbook from the Bowlers.
Yep, from the Bowlers. The Bowlers were a model family for a long time.
Yeah, I've heard that cookbook talked about several times, and I just thought that was kind of funny that she put it in her book. So this is all in the same, you know, section about Mr. Gothard's visit. And she says, and then I guess they went to a camp, her and Jana. And she said, even more surprising, though, was the fact that after the camp, my elder sister, Jana, was personally invited to Mr. Gothard to visit IBLP headquarters in Chicago and work there for a while. We were new to the inner workings of IBLP, but we knew enough already to understand why it was only Jana who was invited. She was the only elder Duggar girl who was blonde, and everyone knew that Mr. Gothard liked blonde girls. We joke about it, calling Jana one of Gothard's girls. It didn't occur to me at all how strange, unsafe, and unwise it was. And if I had, I doubt I would have been able to speak out against it. Sweet Jilly Muffin had grown up, but I was still terrified of conflict and would do anything I could to avoid it.
Yes.
And I wanted to point this out, especially because this is something that a lot of people had shared about with the other book by the other sister, Ginger, and how she kind of addressed the same thing, but she still didn't give it the weight in her book of how disgusting and unsafe it was. And I just wanted to point out that I am so glad that she made a point of saying that she said this, and a lot of us did, right? Like, a lot of us joked about it, but now we have realized how terrible it was that we did it. And she owned what she said, and she said that was not a good thing to do. And I think that will validate more, you know, of the significance of what it meant to be a Gothard girl, because it wasn't just about being picked out and chosen. Mm-hmm. It was that you were picked out, chosen, and then abused by him.
Yeah.
When you were a Gothard girl.
purpose.
I'll say that again. I didn't hear you.
You were picked out and chosen for a purpose.
To be groomed. Yeah. And I feel like Ginger missed the mark on that. And I'm so glad Jill didn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It wasn't toned down. She was very brave with this.
Oh my gosh. And I like to sum up her book in one word, and it's like the only thing I can keep coming back to is fierce.
Mm-hmm.
Like you can describe her book in one word. To me, it is fierce. She mm-hmm. let it out. She let it, but she did it with class.
Mm-hmm.
She did it with truth
mm-hmm.
and she did it with validation.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of survivor books can miss that. And I think a lot of people experience feeling judged mm-hmm. and not validated by Ginger's book. And I feel like the survivors will, if you read this as a survivor, I feel like you would feel validated. I can't speak for everyone. But in my personal opinion, I think this is a definitely more validating, expose of what the inner workings of her family and its relation to IVLP. And it's very similar to just because they were famous and on TV, it didn't distinguish in their story a whole lot. There was, a lot of correlation between other people's experiences and their experiences. Theirs was just magnified on a worldwide level.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm trying to see how many more notes I have. So she talks about, having the crew there and stuff. Let me see where I'm at. I don't want to go too long because I want us to have a chance to talk. We might have to delve into this a little bit more on another day because there's a lot of notes. I'll have to see what page I'm on. I can't even see that on here.
A second. Do we have comments on things?
I guess we can go and see. Let's see. Okay, so Ashley says, hello, I haven't read it. I follow some channels who are reading portions of the book. Oh, cool. Mm-hmm. And then Ashley says, I had no idea the parents had to be obeyed after a dad gave away his daughter for marriage. That is a really good point.
Yeah, that is not across the board, I would say. Yeah. Parents, that is a little bit, that's two steps further than a lot of the families would have done, I feel like, because that I don't feel like that was a lot of that was teaching that was prevalent in the curriculum. I think that might have been you had a hierarchy or a spectrum in ATI of what families believed. So some people believed less or practiced less, and others practiced more. And they would take it two steps further to look more holy, and those were usually your model families. So I think that concept was probably one of those situations where that spectrum was taken two steps further because they were model family. Cause I don't remember that being taught in the groups or that, cause if it had come up, my parents probably would have said something because we followed it pretty closely. And that wasn't a thing. As soon as I was married, my responsibility was transferred to my husband. I didn't answer. And my husband didn't have to yield to his thing. Cause that's the whole point of having nuclear families is that dad gets to decide for that family. He now becomes the umbrella. So that was a little bit different than the general teaching, I think. Is that what you remember?
Yeah, I definitely remember there. I mean, and it's like with everything in the cult, there were spectrums and there were levels. When I went to headquarters, I was surprised that one of our housemates had attended a church that had charismatic music with drums. And I was like, what? Like, oh, I didn't think we could do that here.
Yes, those were considered the fringe students because they were allowed to do a little bit more than what the standard ones were, and the ones that didn't do even more than the norm. they were considered extra holy.
Right. And so, you know, definitely I there was a lot of people that I think use that obeying your parents to manipulate their children even after marriage. And not necessarily requiring obedience, but like, if you don't do what I tell you to do, then I'm not going to help you, kind of manipulation.
Very true. So that some of that was used a little bit with me, as far as, or we were the black sheep, you know, we couldn't, there was threats of not being able to contact siblings, because we would make them fall away from the teachings, because we weren't following the teachings, that kind of thing. So there was always that threat there. Also, I think it just behooved the Duggar dad to keep them under that level of control, because it was beneficial financially to him.
Right, because he would lose some income stream if he didn't have babies to put on the TV, because his wife could no longer have children. I don't know where that happened in the storyline, but at some point Michelle stopped having children, and she would stop having children. So he needed to have something that would get ratings. And he knew that having his first couple of grandbabies filmed would get ratings. And so, and then when Josh lost his ability to be on the TV, it fell on the girls that were older to start being the, you know, focus.
There we go. I'm back.
So, I think we're going to go ahead and, stop writing the notes. Let us know if you want us to keep going on. We can maybe try and, schedule another live soonish. Next week I start a brand new job and I'm very excited about it, but I don't want to jinx it. So I'm not saying a whole lot about it, because it's like, well, what if it doesn't actually come through? And it, I'm like, yeah, so nervous about it right now. So that was part of my long day, is I had to do some pre-employment stuff. And I had to go to a very large hospital system and like walk blocks and blocks and blocks that I've not walked before. And I am just so dead today. Okay, good. Keep going on soonish. So Marcy and I will definitely talk, and we will, you know, share more about this book. But before we leave, we definitely want to see if y'all have any questions, comments about what we reviewed. And Ashley, thank you so much for subscribing. I love it. Thank you so much. We really appreciate you. And we, of course, we appreciate all our subscribers. And we, you know, I just want to say, like, the whole last minute thing is just because Marcy and I's lives are so insane and crazy, and we just really never know what's going to happen from day to day. And so we try to pick a date like a week or two ahead, and then I'm reluctant to like even post it until like it's closer. And then it's like that day comes and like all hell has broke loose for both of us. And we're like, we just can't, I can't do it. And I'm like,
you know, I wonder, and this may be edged too closely to the fundamental view of things, but I have found that if something's very important, if truth needs to be stated, if it needs to be put out there, that forces, whatever they might be, fight against you. And I think sometimes that happens here, because it really is. We will have a calm day, and then the day of, all hell breaks loose.
I mean, like, I've been having a really good time and haven't been getting too much, you know, stress or anything. And, you know, I kind of thought I might have bit off more than I can chew with the day with having my pre-employment stuff. But I was like, oh, it's going to be done like, you know, midday. I can rest the whole rest of the day. At all. So tomorrow I will be sitting in bed laying and icing, and you know, until I know for sure that my body's not gonna go, you're gonna be in the ER today because you did too much yesterday.
Yes, take care of yourself.
I will definitely. And I have, you know, it's like I keep going. I can't keep pushing myself because I can't not be able to show up on my first day of work come Monday.
Yeah.
So
rest at the beginning.
Yeah. And for those that don't know, I'm expecting my first grandbaby soon. And so a lot of my time off has been trying to help my son get prepared for being a dad. And he is he's working on getting his GED right now so he can get a job. So that's where we're at. And so a lot of changes the last couple of weeks for us. So Ashley says, I just want to say I grew up Christian in Mississippi and we thought the Duggars were crazy. We didn't believe that they were happy all the time.
Yeah. But
No. what was that?
They saw right through that. Way to go.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, even me being like when they were on it, I was newly married and I was like, oh, look, it's an IVLP family. Oh, how exciting, you know, to have this Christian family, you know, on there. And I'm like, they're kind of weird, like even more weird than some of the people I met at headquarters, you know. And I was like, this is interesting. And like, just as more and more gets known about the way that Jim Bob ran his family, it just is like so mind-boggling that they were put on such a pedestal. And I think because they were, the control got worse.
Oh, yes. And you can see the progression in the book of the dad's, how he changes and the control gets out of hand. Like when you hand power to certain types of personalities or bents, that they lose themselves in it. And you can see that in the book, that he lost himself in it. It probably but he just had more power to act upon it.
Well, he had the financial backing and ability to have more power over his family as well.
Tools. He got more tools. Why not use them? And he was being told it was right to do it.
Right. And he was, you know, I mean, he was basically following in Gothard's footsteps, because it's essentially what Gothard did. Was the more power he got, the more he tried to control his people. Mm-hmm. You know, I thought the Duggars were wholesome entertainment. My mom thought they were creepy. Turns out mom was right. Moms usually are, you know, except for when cult moms. Oh, so another thing I wanted to say before we head off is that if you know any older parents who are struggling with the fact that their children are leaving Christianity or they're leaving the cult, especially the IVLP cult, I would highly recommend this book for any of those parents, because I think it can really shed a light on the effect that the teachings and the control had on those children. And maybe they can understand where their children are coming from. And their children are not the only ones that are putting up boundaries and saying, we're not going to tolerate this anymore, and I need to have space from you to heal and, you know, get better. So I know that my own parents really struggled for a long time with, you know, the progression of their children leaving the cult, and being presented with the fact that they use those teachings to abuse us. And, you know, if you are a parent of a survivor of IBLP and ATI children, I want you to encourage you to look in the mirror and really try to understand what effect you had on your children, and acknowledge that whether you intended good or not, you harmed your children. And validate that they were hurt. And I really think all your children really want is for you to say, I was wrong and I'm sorry. And how do we move forward from here? And I want to do better. Like, honestly, I think it comes down to that, is own it and change is all they want.
I would like to add a little caution to that. Just in my experience, I would not have a problem recommending the book to my mom, knowing that she might not like what she reads, because I know it won't affect the relationship she and I have.
or that if it does, I'm okay with those consequences.
Mm-hmm.
I'm that because I've grown enough, or I have come to a point enough to be okay with that. But I know that maybe other, if that were to be done by a different person than myself, like say a sibling or something, that it might affect relationship for them in a different way than it did for me. So, and that might not be something that they would are ready to do yet. So if you do that with a parent or a, you know, someone that's affected you that way, be prepared for the consequences of that.
The cost?
Yes.
The cost.
There is a cost. So, and if you're not ready to do it, then if in doubt, don't.
Absolutely. I agree with that. I was kind of more, you know, mm-hmm. hoping that maybe a parent of an IBL peer would listen to this. And I was kind of appealing to them, mm-hmm. not necessarily their children, to take the responsibility of, you know, yeah, presenting the truth to their parents. Yeah. You know? Yeah. So,
sorry, I did that correlation.
That's okay. But I mean, I think your point was very valid that, you know, when you have to decide if you are ready to take on the cost of what it's going to be like if you confront your parents with the truth. And a lot of us have gone through that. And a lot of us are years into it. I would say my family is about 10, 11 years into being confronted with the truth. And, you know, last year was the first time, you know, my father was able to own his part in it where we felt validated. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it can take a really long time for people to come out of it and acknowledge their part in it. And some people never will. And that's the other thing is if you don't think that presenting fact and truth to someone who's harmed you is going to do any good, don't waste your breath. I wouldn't. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, do what you think is best. And maybe sometime you might have to eventually do it just so you can get your truth out and be heard, whether they accept it or not. But, you know, definitely be cautious.
Yeah.
And be ready for it. You know, make sure that you've done the healing to where you can be ready for it.
Count the
cost. So, yes, count the cost. Count the cost. And, oh, man, I just love that. So, Jill, if you ever see this, thank you so much for your book. And we'll be talking about it more. So, if we do, and you happen to, like, join us on our live, that'd be amazing. But thank you all for watching. And, you know, if you know someone who might, you know, get a benefit from us sharing this information, you know, please send them a link to this podcast. And we, you know, the more people that you share it with, the more people that will see it and, you know, feed the algorithm. So we are more visible to more people. And we really appreciate y'all, and y'all have a wonderful night. And there was a new closing I was going to do, and now I have to remember it. If anybody has not told you lately, I want to tell you that I am proud of you, and you matter, and your mental health matters too. So y'all have a great night. Bye.
Bye, y'all.